This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beattie of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during January. First, we'll watch one of the year's very best meteor showers, then track down Venus and Mars, size up a celestial queen with an ego problem, and learn about a celestial hunter who also has an ego problem. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. Well, 2019 is behind us and 2020 has begun. Every January, millions of us resolve to do something, anything different or better in the coming year. I suppose my resolution would be to get out and enjoy the night sky more. It'll be tough. Often I'm too busy or too tired or, well, you get the picture. So how's about you and I agree to do more stargazing this coming year, okay? We'll want to make good on that pledge right away, because a most excellent opportunity occurs in the first week of January with the arrival of the quadranted meteor shower. These meteors get their name from Quadrans Muralis, an obsolete constellation near the handle of the Big Dipper, and they seem to radiate from that point in the sky. The source of this shower is an object designated 2003 EH1, which loops around the Sun every 5.5 years between the orbits of Earth and Jupiter. It's not an active comet like most meteor showers have. More likely, it's an extinct comet that no longer has any ice. The quads, as we sometimes call them, can deliver at least one meteor per minute under excellent, perfectly dark skies. In fact, in some years, observers have reported seeing twice as many. But few of us ever see anything close to 2 per minute, because the shower's maximum activity lasts only several hours, and it's easy to miss. Seeing 25 per hour is more typical. Fortunately, this year the peak is well-timed for North America in the wee hours of January 4th. The first quarter moon will set shortly after midnight, and after that, the rate of activity should steadily increase until dawn. So bundle up and go view the quads. Another celestial event occurs in the first week of the new year, though this one is more subtle. On January 5th, at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Earth is closer to the Sun than it'll be at any time for the rest of the year. It's roughly 2% closer, about 1.5 million miles than average. Can't you just feel all that extra warmth? Now, I don't expect you to be up that early, but because January nights are so long, most of us are up and out the door well before sunrise. I know, it's a drag for me too, but right now, those early risings give you a chance to see Mars in the pre-dawn sky. The red planet rises about 3 hours before the sun, and you'll find it well up in the southeast as late as 45 minutes before sunrise. Wasn't it just a few months ago that we saw Mars in the west after sunset? Since then, Earth's orbital motion has shifted the red planet's location quite a bit. Around mid-January, the path of Mars across the sky brings it near the red supergiant star Antares, the heart of the Scorpion. On the 20th, these two reddish beacons will be joined by a very thin crescent moon. What a pretty sight that will be. Mars is one of Earth's two closest planetary neighbors. The other one, Venus, is putting on a show in the southwestern sky after sunset. You've maybe seen Venus creeping up from the horizon these past few weeks, but during January it'll be hard to miss. It starts the month about 25 degrees up at sunset, but climbs quite a bit higher by month's end. Get used to seeing Venus after sundown, because it'll be with us in the evening sky until May. Now let's talk stars for a bit. What's your favorite star pattern? It doesn't have to be an entire constellation. It might be any obvious arrangement of bright stars, what astronomers call an asterism. Maybe it's the Big Dipper, but right now that's lying low along the northern horizon on January evenings. Another obvious asterism is the 5-star zigzag of Cassiopeia. It looks like a squashed W in summertime and like a flattened M in winter. After sunset, once it gets dark, face north, and look almost straight up. There's Cassiopeia in its M position. It's a little wider than your clenched fist held at arm's length. This grouping is the Big Dipper's counterpart in the northern sky. In spring and summer, when the Dipper rides high, Cassiopeia lurks low. In fall and winter, it's Cassiopeia's turn to shine high over the evening world, while the Dipper sinks low behind the trees. All five stars in this M-shaped asterism are truly big and bright, outshining the sun by anywhere from 70 to 8,000 times. This impressive brightness, combined with being no more than a few hundred light years away, is why you can spot this distinctive quintet almost at a glance from your driveway. In Greek mythology, Cassiopeia was a queen in what's now Ethiopia, and she was the mother of Andromeda. Ancient sky watchers not only subdivided the sky into constellations, but also gave each noteworthy star its own proper name. Some of these can be from various cultures and flukes of folklore, but often they simply named the body part that the star supposedly represented in its constellation figure. For example, although the middle star in Cassiopeia's M has no official name, the ones on either side of it, plus the bright one at the left end, are named Kaf, Shedar, and Rukhba. These are medieval European corruptions of the Arabic words for hand, breast, and knee. Let's leave the queen and shift our gaze over toward east. You'll see the stars of Orion, the hunter, striding up from the horizon. Look in particular for a trio of bright stars in a vertical row. These mark Orion's belt, yet another asterism, and there's nothing else like them anywhere in the sky. To the belt's upper left is the bright star Betelgeuse, which marks the hunter's shoulder. Maybe you've heard it called Betelgeuse, like that weird 1988 movie. Use whatever works for you. Study Betelgeuse a bit, and maybe you'll notice that it's got a warm color, like weak ginger ale. Betelgeuse is a red supergiant, a truly massive star that has swollen to tremendous size in its old age. But Betelgeuse still looks like a pinpoint in the sky because it's very far away, about 600 light years. On the right side of the belt is Orion's other really bright star, Rigel. Can you see the difference between peachy Betelgeuse and icy white Rigel? It might seem counterintuitive, but those icy white stars are the very hottest. Rigel's surface temperature is more than 20,000 degrees Fahrenheit, whereas Betelgeuse is only a third of that. Go figure. This reddish star with the funny name has been acting funny the past few months. Ordinarily, it's almost as bright as Rigel, but Betelgeuse has been getting fainter and fainter. It's now half the brightness that it had in October, and in fact, it's dimmer now than at any time since astronomers began measuring its brightness almost a century ago. And get this, they don't know why this is happening or when the dimming will stop. A celestial mystery is afoot. Here's one more tidbit before we say adieu for this month. On January 10th, the full moon slides through the dim outer fringe of Earth's shadow. Astronomers call this a penumbral eclipse, but I call it a barely there eclipse because the shading is so subtle you'd almost have to know it's happening to notice. Anyway, no one in North America will see it, because it happens in the middle of the day here. But if you know anyone in Asia, ask them to check it out for you. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, including a free interactive star chart for any time or date, check out our website, skyandtelescope.com. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find this sky tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please, leave a rating or a review. It will help others to find our show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Next month, we'll spend a little time with the part of the Milky Way you can see in winter rather than in summer. Until then, I wish you clear skies.